Hello again for Good Word. This is your host, Bruce Johansson, Professor of Biblical Studies at the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. We continue to look at agents of hope, and this time one of the greats of the Old Testament is Isaiah the prophet. And to assist me in our discussion, I'm pleased to welcome again Dr. Zdravko Stefanovic, and also Dr. Dave Thomas. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Bruce,
to our discussion.
It's good to be here.
Isaiah is an amazing person, isn't he? I personally think that of all the Old Testament prophets, as much as I love Amos and Hosea and those guys, I think Isaiah for me stands out as one of the absolutely most powerful. And yeah, well, it's hard to say. Jeremiah is wonderful too. But at least in my own life, Isaiah has had a huge impact. What do we know about him? What sort of background, family, time?
He came from a good family, and some Jewish traditions tried to propose that he was related to the king himself. But what we know for sure from the text of the Bible is that he was highly educated, gifted man, who was an official recorder in the palace in Jerusalem.
Some people think he was a priest. Do you think there's anything to that?
I'm not acquainted with that. I know that
because
he was chronicled.
He was called in the temple. I don't know if that is a really
because
good
of
connection.
His pre-admittance into the temple.
Yeah,
we know about Jeremiah.
So you were saying he was highly educated. That is something that I think we should pay attention to a little bit.
Trained to be the official recorder of what happened to the kings.
And of course, his writing style is magnificent. Isn't
oh yes,
it? Yeah. He had easy access to the king in the court. That also says that's that right. He must have been fairly high up there. His life spanned four kings. Well, not really Uzziah. He was born in the year that Uzziah died, I believe. And then there's Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And the last reference to him is in Hezekiah's appeal to him. When Sennacherib was threatening Jerusalem, I believe.
So how many years of prophetic ministry, Stravko?
Well over 40.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the longest ones we know, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Legend has it that he was sawn in half. I don't think we have any scriptural evidence for that.
No, but some of the passages from his book may easily lead us to believe that his opponents would have done that to him.
Yeah, and some people link that comment with Hebrews 11, the verse in Hebrews 11.
That's right.
By people who
sawn asunder. That's correct. Wow. So this he lived in a turbulent time. I think the one thing that hits me the quickest when I think of this man is his call. Mm-hmm. That is one of the most powerful passages.
It's too bad it comes in chapter 6, though. Should have come in chapter 1.
Right at the beginning. Yeah. He has this vision, and he has an enormous sense of unworthiness. And then a burning coal is taken. I've often wondered, you know, why that was done. Have you ever puzzled about that?
Well,
was that an encouraging thing for him?
Normally, when we open a commentary, there is an insight on that passage that in the year when King Uzziah died, his eyes, the prophet's eyes, were turned toward the living God who was still sitting on the throne when the earthly king faded away. Mm-hmm. One interesting thing that is not easily found in the commentaries, at least I have not found, but which comes from the Bible, is that it was King Uzziah who, through his pride, became leprous, or at least he got a serious skin disease. Hmm. And that happened in the temple. Now, for the rest of his life, this king had to be kept in a separate place, away from the people. And even when he was buried in a separate place. And in the year when he died, into that same temple, young Isaiah comes in. He does not see himself like the proud king did, but he sees God. Mm. He's not looking to a mirror. He's looking through a window toward heavens, and he sees God. And he is cleansed in that same place.
Mm.
Just the opposite.
Wow. Hmm. And then comes the call. Who will go? And his response is unhesitating and immediate. Send me.
In spite of his sense of unworthiness.
Yes. Yeah. See, I wondered whether that call was somehow a response to, you may be unworthy, you may be human and frail, but I cleanse you. Mm-hmm. I anoint you almost in a sense with fire. And the poetic part of me gets into the passage, and I think of his message afterwards is not necessarily a gentle message either.
No.
It's one of...
But see, what intrigues me about that sense of calling is that that becomes the anchor point for his whole life.
Yes.
In other words, in spite of his difficulty, he is sustained by his very clear understanding that God has commissioned him to do this. Yeah. And I think that agents of hope are very benefited if they have some event in their lives to which they can look and say that God, at that point, put this responsibility or this burden upon me. I see the same function in Paul's life, you know, mm-hmm. with what happened in Damascus and thereafter. That sense of calling is so important because life mm-hmm. is full of adversity, and if you don't have that to hold you, you can easily give up.
I've always struggled with Paul and Isaiah in that point because for me it was a slow becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has that dramatic beginning.
No, but many. But I don't think how it comes really matters. You know, I share the same thing with you. Mine is kind of a slow growth.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I would ask you, what do we know about John the Beloved's transition? Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing written.
Yeah.
There's no Paul experience, no Isaiah experience.
I've always kind of coveted those experiences.
Yeah. Well, I used to for a while, but mm-hmm. I'm happy.
Oh yes,
where I am now. And you notice the durability of this man, that sense of calling. And John the Beloved as well, it doesn't seem to matter whether it comes in dramatic or quiet way, it still has holding power.
Yes. We look at this man, he not only witnessed through his words, but also through his family.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We find, you know, last week we talked about Philip and his prophetess daughters. I believe there was a young woman who also had a part to play in his message.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could say a word about that.
Yes, in the book of Isaiah in chapters 7 and 8, we have the description of a major crisis. And Isaiah intervenes, and as he does with his whole family. In fact, he says, the children whom the Lord has given me and I myself, we are the signs to the people of Israel. And there is a person by the title of prophetess mentioned in that passage.
Mm.
And the possibility is that it was Isaiah's wife.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole family, basically, they were witnesses for God. Now, the previous week we talked about Philip and his four daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to witnessing and working for God, genders are not and should not be barriers.
Yeah. In fact, the Old Testament has some other places about young men and young women,
mm-hmm.
You know, being the spokespersons through God's Spirit. And yes, very, very powerful. And then the names of those young mm-hmm. boys also.
Mm-hmm. A remnant. Shall return.
Yeah.
Yes, and that brings us to the great themes. What were the great themes of hope that this man preached in his prophecy?
That although God disciplines his people,
mm-hmm.
God's grace and mercy is more abundant than his judgments.
Yeah. He had a tremendous sense of the sovereignty of God, didn't
mm-hmm.
he? He really fought with Ahab about making alliances with other nations.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like, you know, you don't need to go out and make... It's not that he was apolitical. He simply believed that God was sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that he points out that while religious rituals may be important, that if they don't elicit some kind of faith, from faith, or they don't produce some kind of moral... reaction, that they are a waste of time, and that they actually can, you know, our rituals can become abhorrent to God.
It's kind of interesting because you find that with many of the prophets, Israel's history has kind of crescendoed in a peak of idolatry and abuse of the gifts that God gave, the temple, the sacrifices, all those things. They turn them into idolatrous behavior, and then comes out this.
Yeah, in fact, they use the blessings of God to create islands of independence from which they then fire salvos.
Yes.
Back.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
We have talked about the crisis under King Ahaz. It is also good to remember the crisis mentioned in 2 Kings, when an Assyrian king or another Assyrian king, Sennacherib, threatened here. And King Hezekiah was basically besieged. And on his prison, King Sennacherib, he boasted how he shut Hezekiah up like a bird in the cage, surrounded him. And the intervention, the story is just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
What is nice about it is that Isaiah not only brought the message of hope to the king, but he also composed a song, and it reads like this: "The virgin daughter of Zion despises you and mocks you.
Mm.
The daughter of Jerusalem tosses her head as you flee. Who is it you have insulted and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and lifted your eyes in pride? Against the Holy One of Israel."
Mm.
Powerful words of hope.
Yes.
That God was
Yes.
stronger than the human pride of the time.
Yeah. Irrespective of the ups and downs of the fortunes of his people.
Yeah. And, you know, if you talk about great images, you have to think of the second half of Isaiah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which talks about the world as it will be, mm-hmm. the kingdom of God again, which I think is a very powerful one. And given the distress of his time, how wonderful that part of Isaiah must have been to the people
mm-hmm.
in distress.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be achieved through the work of a suffering servant.
Yeah. Mm.
I think for me, Isaiah 42... and 53 are two of the most powerful passages.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the suffering servant, because we don't tend to think of good things coming by suffering. We tend to think of triumphant activity bringing good things.
Mm-hmm.
But in the economy of God, somehow suffering and selflessness are some of the most powerful tools.
Yeah. And actually, Jesus applied those words. I think Isaiah 42, he was in the synagogue in his hometown, mm-hmm. and he takes Isaiah 42 and specifically mm-hmm. applies it to himself.
Yeah.
He is the servant, the son,
yeah.
and God is well pleased. In fact, that's the background for Matthew's baptism.
Mm-hmm. But the faithfulness of God and the sovereignty of God are wonderful, hopeful themes.
They are.
2 weeks ago, we have talked about Daniel and apocalyptic prophecies. Mm. And very often when we hear the word apocalyptic, we feel frightened.
Yes.
Isaiah has apocalyptic passages, chapters 24 through 27, but it is nice to read them. They are filled with hope.
Mm. Gentlemen, thank you so much for contributing to our discussion. I also wish to thank our program engineer, John Campbell, and thanks to all our listeners. This is Bruce Johansson for Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.